The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
It's Kiefer and Curry, everybody. Another edition coming up right here. It is Kip Kiefer, Tony Curry, ready to talk about whatever's on our minds. And on a morning like this, Tony, sometimes my mind's rather blank. So we're going to reach deep into the barrel of ideas and come up with a theme. Hope you're doing well today and ready to go. I thought a couple weeks ago we talked about movies that were memorable and influential as folks continue to try and kind of get to know us and what our background is and how we arrived at this point. So I thought I'd reach back into the old nostalgia bucket and see if we can come up with a few reminiscences of things in our childhood, programs, books, any other influences. Thought that might be fun. And television shows particularly, because we were both children, I should say, of that explosive era where TV became a dominant force. Now, of course, it was invented about 20 years before we debuted, but it really hit its stride pretty much in our childhood. And I was just wondering off the top of your head, thought it might be an interesting subject to talk about some of the shows you watched as a young man and things that stick in your mind and were even influencers on who you turned out to be.
Now, you know, I love this topic more than anything, because we just lost, of course, Norman Lear, who, of course, was executive director of probably every show that I ever loved, everything from Good Times to Maude he had Three's Company, you name it, he did it. He just was an amazing guy. It really wasn't afraid to tackle anything, but I'm gonna back it up a little bit more, because we're talking about, you know, during our days we had three networks. We had ABC, CBS, and NBC. We didn't have Fox, and I'm not even sure if we had public television at that point in time when I was living in Ohio. I don't know if we had OPT, Ohio Public Television, or not. And if we did, it was a show about, you know, 24 hours of beavers, and it wasn't something we wanted to watch for 24 straight hours. So you had to find things to watch until that magic cable box came to your neighborhood. But the two worst words that you could ever utter in the Curry household would have been uttered this morning, and I'm telling you, it would have ruined the year. That is antenna ice. My dad was a southeast man. We were always pointing the antenna towards Bullitt County, which was home, of course, of WCPO and WLWT. Their TV stations where we could actually point our antennas towards their sticks. And of course, people are like, what the hell are you talking about? Yes, believe it or not, we had antennas. And if you go to some rural parts of Arkansas, you'll find more antennas. There's still antennas out there, folks. People are still watching free cable. It doesn't cost them squats. So stop complaining about your $235 a month. You can watch television for free. But I remember, you know, obviously up in the Midwest, up in Cincinnati storms, we'd have a tad more ice than we certainly got down here in the South. Pleasantly surprised at what I saw this morning. And quite frankly, probably would have bust my ass if I wasn't paying attention when I walked out to get the paper. That's something else I still do, is I grab the paper. But yeah, my dad would have absolutely lost his mind, because before the first cup of coffee, before the first whiz of the morning, before the first yelling of my mother, he would have had somebody up on the roof with a spatula, some type of framework, maybe some glitter wrap, something to forge forward to make sure that he could watch his favorite television in the morning. Because if that antenna got stuck by ice, there'd be hell to pay in the Curry household. Somebody, I could have been 4 years old up there. I think he would have sent me up there with my binky and told me to stay up there until the sun got warm enough, until we could actually turn that thing. And of course, we'd open a window. I'd be yelling down through the window, "Is it working yet, Dad?" He's like, "No, turn it again." And of course, you know, but yeah, I remember those. It would have about three or four times a year during wintertime. And so before I'd even get into watching my favorite TV shows, we had to make sure we could watch the TV show first.
Well, you know, that's filling in a lot of blanks for me, because we've talked about here and other mediums, your 18-day stay on a billboard ledge when you first came to Birmingham, vowing to stay up there until Alabama won a football game. You had a lot of experience at that. So that wasn't just that wasn't such a miscellaneous idea. If you'd had an antenna to adjust, you'd have felt right at home up there.
That's true. I had the Marty up there. So it was something. And the funny thing is I had better TV on that billboard back in 1990 that I had at home in the 19 years I lived in Cincinnati, Ohio. I mean, we had that whole thing rigged up. I had the cable going. I could watch movies and all kinds. I could watch the Playboy Channel from that thing if I wanted to. But I could get all the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood I wanted when I was in Westchester, Ohio. So there you have
it. That's incredible. So what were some of the shows in the Curry household that the antenna had to be adjusted to make sure they didn't miss?
Well, I was aware, you know, I was alive, and I, you know, it's one of those things where you try to remember. I vividly remember sitting in front of the TV and my mom telling me there was going to be a brand new show that was going to change television as we've seen it, and that was a show called Sesame Street. And I remember that like it was the back of my brain. And then you go to look the stuff up, and then you're thinking to yourself, do I remember that the way I actually remember? And then you find out that Sesame Street came out in 1945. And of course, I came out in 1966, but I actually got it right. I think Sesame Street actually came out in 1968 or 69.
How about that?
Which is about 2 or 3 years after I was born. And I remember sitting there. And back then, you know, if a show was live and they did a lot of live television shows, if a show was live or it wasn't ready to go and they just weren't ready to air it, it would just go to a blank screen. There would be no music. They would just say, stay tuned. There would be a picture of a television tower. You know, I'm talking with the big lightning bolt on top saying we'll resume shortly. And sometimes you'd sit there and you'd look at your TV screen for like an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh.
You wouldn't go out and look at birds. You wouldn't play with your children. You wouldn't go across the street and talk to your neighbor. You wouldn't read your newspaper. You would sit there and stare a hole through that television and wait for that little magic box to come on. I mean, we were mesmerized by it. But I will tell you that there were two local shows that really transformed my life as an individual. We had Uncle Al. Much like Country Boy Eddie here, we had a guy named Uncle Al who worked on WCPO TV in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I'll never forget it. He always wore this really janky looking red, white, and blue suit with this topper hat. And he was it, man. He was the local morning community kind of guy that probably pulled like 45 and 50 shares before national television got as big as it did, because everything was, you know, we talked about this, everything was community based, everything was localized, man. You wanted to know what was going on in your neighborhood. Believe it or not, we used to know our neighbors more than two stores down. We used to know everybody up and down our street. Now you're lucky if you know the person third down on the left. We knew those things. We were local, we were community based. And so I loved Uncle Al because it was a local show that was filmed here in Cincinnati. It was really difficult to get on. I remember at the end of the show, you got the handful of pennies where you'd reach yourself into a jar of giant pennies and you got to grab the pennies and every penny that you could get to stick on your hand, you got to take home. And I remember I grabbed 117 pennies at the age of 4 years old. I thought I was rich. I was very, very happy. I was like, 117 pennies, you kidding me? And all I can remember is my mom going, get rid of that damn change. It's making too much noise in the back of the car, because it was all over the floorboards of the car.
The
Buick. And then I guess the other show that I kind of catapulted onto, which was kind of a national show, and really, I can make an argument this is probably one of my top five shows of all time. I don't remember a day where I didn't watch it. That was Captain Kangaroo. Captain Kangaroo, man. I would give anything to try to find old episodes of it. And I'm afraid if I did, it would ruin it for me. So I don't know if I want to find it or not. But Captain Kangaroo, Mr. Green Jeans, Bunny Moose, Grandfather Clock. If you used to watch, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It was just fantastic, riveting television. It was just great. I can't even tell you how old I was at the time. I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old. I did the Mr. Rogers stuff. And I'm kind of going chronological order here, but it was just riveting television, man. And I want to say it was on for like an hour and a half, which was really a long time. I don't know. I don't think we had television commercials. I don't remember having television commercials during morning television. I don't know if you remember that. I don't remember any morning television commercials. Maybe they kind of slipped the toys in while we were watching. They kind of got us hooked early, us kids, on that commercial crack. But I'd have to say Captain Kangaroo, man. I just remember those two shows really get me catapulted into the television land.
I wish I could remember details about Captain Kangaroo. I know I watched it religiously. Tony, here's my question. Back in the 1960s, when that was at its height, Did Mr. Green Jeans go off the set afterwards and head to the local strip club? did Captain Kangaroo have a terrible, marijuana or cocaine habit? All the things we associate now with Hollywood and big stars and scandals, had they both been divorced four or five times? I think that's a fascinating subject. I know Captain Kangaroo, his name was Bob Keenum, I believe. I don't know. I to this day don't know who Mr. Green Jeans were. He might just been a guy that drug in off the street and stuck some overalls on.
Was it Bob Keesham? Was it Keesham or Keenum?
Keesham. That's Keesham, right.
Yeah, Keesham. Keenum. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's something I am going to do on this winter wonderland.
Well, you know what we didn't do though? We didn't, first of all, we didn't have the internet and we didn't dig. We didn't care. Yeah. We didn't care
for anybody. If it didn't happen on your street or right in the middle of your town, you really had no knowledge of anything in that era. And that's what people would be amazed, especially young people now. Now something goes viral in 15 minutes and everybody on earth knows it. But back then, we have no idea what the moral character of these guys were or what they were up to off the air, because it wasn't in our community. We had no way of knowing.
Yeah, true. True. And it would have absolutely broken my heart. I remember when Tom Hanks came out and did the Mr. Rogers movie, and I was just praying. I was just praying. I was praying that it wasn't some type of documentary or autobiographical documentary on some of the dark sides of Mr. Green. I just was praying that it was all good. And it was, because certainly, we want to get into our Michael Jacksons and we want to get into these kids that started their lifestyles very, very early and how they preoccupy themselves with things that our children are into. And I don't know if they know if they're doing what they're doing is wrong or not, but when you have a person or individuals who have generated so much notoriety and so much beauty in not only their artwork, but also their artistry and the history of dealing and learning with the psychology and the sociology of children and doing it incredibly well, because let's face it. A lot of our parents would have lost their brains if we didn't have Captain Kangaroo, if we didn't have Sesame Street, if we didn't have the New Zoo Review, if we didn't have the Electric Company. You remember those shows? Romper Room. If we didn't have some of those TV shows, and they were about as dumb as a box of rocks. Now we weren't trying to get, we weren't doing Little Einsteins. This was dropping a box of ping pong balls on a damn bunny head, and it was hilarious and it was great television. We weren't doing Little Einsteins, my friend, and our parents loved us for it. And thank goodness none of those guys did turn out to be creeps.
Well, you know, we go to a TV studio every week and do our show, and you know, there's really not much going on around there. I mean, there's the news people that are in and out and do local news still is a profit center. So that's why it's on so many hours in the day. It's hard to believe the 6 o'clock news starts at 4 o'clock in most places now, because they're trying to get all the advertising revenue that they keep themselves squeezed out. But, you know, I'm thinking about in this reminiscing about what just a beehive of activity a TV studio was back in the day. Man. They were producing a bunch of live programs all throughout the day. I remember as a kid, and I'm not real proud to admit this, but I never on Saturday morning ever missed the local wrestling show because it was just a three-ring circus of all these big brutes that would come in these tiny studios that seated about 25 fans, and they would put on a live wrestling performance, and it was right there in the TV studio. You would see all these guys, and they'd be promoting throughout, you know, a big, you know, come live and see it at the local arena that whatever night that was designated. But this was an hour or an hour and a half show every Saturday morning with live wrestling on TV produced right in your local TV studio. I mean, what a different era,
man. It was just absolutely crazy. And the two things, this is bringing back so many memories, because when you talked about your favorite TV shows, I'm thinking like Welcome Back, Cotter, and Happy Days, and some of those shows in the 70s, and certainly some of those are in play. But when you're talking about the shows that you'd see in passing, I think of you brought up the wrestling. I totally forgot about the wrestling, man, because wrestling was so huge back in the 60s and 70s.
Oh,
and
that's, man.
Of course, those were the guys. These guys weighed 278 pounds. Their bellies were bigger than their heads. They had hair. They were so bad. They'd have these outfits that looked like their grandma made for them, and they would get out there and they would absolutely have a great wrestling. But I would think about, some of the costumes they had. But yeah, just to think about some of the, you know, I think about Mel Allen, This Week in Baseball. I mean,
show.
And that show ran 365, 24/7. It was not just during baseball season. I don't know how they filled the 3 or 4 months they didn't have Major League Baseball band. I mean, I watched that show at 10:30 every Saturday morning, Mel Allen, This Week in Baseball. And Kip, we talked about this, you know, when Nick Saban announced his retirement, everybody in the world was trying to get ahead of it, right? I mean, everyone was trying to stay on it. I mean, I had 17 people texting me 3 minutes after it happened, and I already knew about it. And it's not like I needed, like it was going to change anything, but everyone needed to let me know first, right? Well, This Week in Baseball was talking about the 7 previous days in Major League Baseball. I mean, we have to know what happened 3 minutes ago up in San Diego in a triple play, or else we don't want to watch it. And if we're talking about Major League Baseball plays from the previous Monday that we used to highlight, it was just amazing because it was all we had, and it was great stuff. It was just great stuff. And I remember that. And I remember, you know, the riveting part of television for me, and we talked about this earlier, being live and local, live television, it just didn't get any better. And a guy who brought live television to my TV more so, and it seemed like it was every weekend, but it was probably once a year, was Evel Knievel. I remember it going live, and you know, you would never have a guy jumping. I don't know, these guys in the Red Bull suits or whatever, they could sit there and say it's live. It's probably tape delayed or time delayed. But to actually show a guy jumping 17 buses live on television, I don't know if you'd even do that now. It was absolutely riveting television. And because of that, you know, an hour show would turn into 3.5 hours. I remember my dad would be out in the newspaper, out in his newspaper route, out in his garage. And I'd be inside watching Evel Knievel and his Triumph or his Harley Davidson, one of these super heavy bikes, not the bikes they race now. These things that weigh about 30 pounds and they can fly 700 feet. These were Harley Davidsons. He was jumping motorcycles. And my dad would yell outside, "Has he jumped yet? Has he jumped yet?" And I was like, "No, sir, he has not jumped yet." You know, and he's like, "In a minute, he goes down the ramp, and it looks like he's going to go. Now, don't let me miss it," because there was no instant replay. There was no instant replay. You had to watch it live. You had to watch it live the first time. Or you missed it. Or you had to wait till the news or watch Mel Allen's This Week in Baseball a week later to make sure it was edited to watch. But, yeah, you just the live local aspect of television was so good. You just brought up something that just really, because I've been so blessed that I've gotten an opportunity to do television on VTM, and I do stuff up at Fox 6 twice a week. And of course I do our show with you, so blessed to do that on ABC 3340. And I remember being in radio station halls or in television station halls where you had to say, "Excuse me," to get from one end of the hall to the other. Now you'd be happy to say, "Excuse me," maybe once a month, because someone's either walking down the other side of the hallway or you ain't going to see anybody in a television or a radio hall for weeks on end. I mean, it was a fire ant hill of disorganizational chaos of people trying to figure out how to get the one from the Rex. They had to get this edit done before this aired, before over here. We had to put a sec tone over here and make sure that he's over on this studio 3. It was fantastic. We were bumping into each other. It was so much fun. Now you go into studio, you have 2 people and 2 clickers, and they've got their teleprompters and they're sitting there doing their teleprompter, and God love them, they do a great job. It saved television a ton of money. But now you have your producers, they're not inside the actual studio, they're outside the studio. But they'll tell you they really missed that chaos of what television, live television was back in the day, for sure.
Well, the first program I can think of, and this was a network presentation, and it was 2 weeknights a week. The first half aired on Wednesday night and the second half aired on Thursday. It was a 2-part show every week. And I was absolutely, I couldn't miss it for anything. And if something came up with the family or we had to be somewhere else, I was apoplectic. It was like, I can't miss this. But the first show, Tony, in prime time that I ever got hooked on was a network show. And that show was Batman. Oh, man. Adam West, Burt Ward, the great Cape Crusader, and the Boy Wonder every Wednesday night. I had so much anticipation. I remember talking to my friends at school and wondering, who is going to be the crook this week? Who's going to be the bad guy? It was a brilliant idea that they had, because they had recurring, you know, villains every week. And a couple of times a season, you would get one of the main guys, which was, of course, the Penguin, the Riddler, or the Joker, all brilliantly portrayed by really big time actors. The Penguin was Burgess Meredith, who was a veteran in Hollywood for years, and of course really very late in life made his mark as Mickey the Trainer in the early Rocky movies. You had Cesar Romero, who was a stage actor and a just a fantastic talent, was the Joker with the outrageous red fright wig and the completely pancake white makeup and that ridiculous red pinstripe suit that he wore. These guys always wore the same outfit year after year after year. The continuity of that show is amazing. Then you had the Riddler, played by Frank Gorshin, who was also a Broadway style performer, a singer and dancer, and just a really animated, interesting character. And then the Catwoman, you know, my first crushes. You talk about Farrah Fawcett. I can still remember vividly Julie Newmar in that skin tight Catwoman suit with those big cat nails and the little ears popping up. That got by attention even as an 8 or 9 year old. So but Batman was the formula, of course, was Batman and Robin would be called by Commissioner Gordon on the bat phone, or they would show the bat signal up in the air, and this all the shows started the same with them sliding down the pole in their outfits from their stately mansion. Bruce Wayne was the millionaire who had whose parents in comic books, and I wasn't aware of the comics. I only knew about the TV show, but his parents had been killed in an incident, a mugging, and he, you know, vowed for a life of crime fighting and had all the influences of a bat. But they would jump in the supercharged Batmobile. They had all of the escape things where all these doors and things would open up because he had it cleverly disguised, and they would ride into Gotham City, jump out, run up the steps of City Hall and be in Commissioner Gordon's office. And they would always, by the end of it was only a 30-minute show. By the end of the first part of the episode on Wednesday night, they would have foiled something the criminal did, only to be caught in some kind of a trap. And they were put into this death situation where you had to wait overnight to see how they could possibly get out of this impossible trap that was going to be their demise. And of course, Batman always had a methodology or a piece of equipment or some kind of brilliance that that would extricate them from danger, and they would eventually accost and arrest the terrible criminal and take him away. And then they also had all these guest stars, which would come on with all these kind of fringe guys that you'd never heard of, and that took a little getting used to. But the show was brilliant in its conception, and I never missed it. And to this day, I think about 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays on one of these offbeat channels, the Batman episodes are still on, and I find myself every once in a while going, I can't sleep. Oh, it's 5 o'clock. I can go watch Batman, and I still do it today.
I would watch in a heartbeat. I was a huge Batman fan. The amazing thing about that series, it only ran for 2 years. It only ran from 66.
Is that
to,
right?
It only ran from 66 to 68, and then we get picked up in syndication, and that's where it was much like the Brady Bunch, where it got picked up in syndication. Was much bigger in syndication. It was just an amazing television show. And you know, the amazing thing is you always had a great fight in it. There was always a huge fight.
The
powers and the sucker punch was unbelievable. And something that they did in television that no one had ever done to my right in television to that point, they were the first to ever have something called a cliffhanger. And you mentioned on Wednesday nights, it was a 30-minute show, which is hard to believe, but it was a 30-minute show. I want to say I remember it as an hour show, and then it ended at the top of the hour, and then the next hour it picked up where it left off. But they'd always show you, whether it was a half an hour or an hour or not, I don't remember. But I remember they'd always show you the last couple of seconds of the previous one to get you in the loop.
And that narrator would go, you missed, you know, he would go through that whole deal where he would kind of review real quickly what happened in the first show.
And I mean, you would think, you know, you'd have the big, saw blade, you know, running right up.
They had no chance to escape.
Adam West is inside of his leg. It was over, you know, and of course it was just so over the top. They knew exactly what they're doing. Do you remember Batman the movie? the 2-hour movie, which was just an absolute classic. And I'm so glad they made that movie where they had the, what they call it? Holy anti shark venom.
That was all of the main criminals teaming
that
up.
That was everything, man. It was 2 hours of everything. Oh, it was an amazing movie.
They introduced the bat boat, the bat copter, yes, we'd never seen before.
The anti shark repellent. It was just a fantastic movie. And I don't, you think about a TV show that maybe run 6, 7, 8, 9 years, if a show to run 2 or 3 years and actually get a network television movie out of
amazing.
It was just fantastic. And I'm glad you brought that up because you brought that up. I'll bring up another show that really kind of ran the same course, but it was a Western. And it's a show that I would give anything to watch, but I can't find. Wild Wild West.
It was off the wall. It was really campy kind of. And, we were probably too young to really get it. It would be great to go back and watch that because I think there was just a lot of inside kind of humor and kind of, different things that you pick up on if you were an adult watching that. I remember watching as a kid and just going, what just happened? But Captain James West, that was a...
There was a lot more massage. There was a lot more massage. There was a lot more misogyny. And the other thing I remember though, was they did the cliffhanger. They did a half an hour, 45-minute show. And then at the end of each show, it would end with them in some peril or some strange situation. And then you would tune in and man, you did not miss that next week because if you missed that next week, guess what you're doing? You're on your rotary phone calling your next door neighbor saying, can you please tell me what happened on Batman 15 minutes ago? My mom made me take a bath. I mean, you couldn't miss television. I mean, it was fantastic. It was just so good to watch. It really was. We had it so good back then.
I'm recalling because I was talking about the narrator that carried you from one Batman to the other, and this is kind of survived because I find myself saying it sometime. Tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. That guy had a real iconic voice. I'd like to even know who that guy was doing the voiceovers were because he really made the show too. The show was brilliant. There were so many shows in that era too that now are so much more fun to watch because you get them, when you're 7 or 8 years old, you're really not sure what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. But, there were even comedy shows that were pretty sophisticated. I think back to Eddie Albert and Ava Gabor. Green Acres was a show that was way ahead of its time because it was all kinds of insinuated humor and everybody around poor Eddie Albert, who was the star of the show, who remember if folks are not remembering the show or weren't familiar with it, he was a million-dollar lawyer in New York and got tired of the grind and wanted to move out to the country and become a farmer. Mm-hmm. And he drug his sophisticated big city wife, Ava Gabor, out to the great town of Hooterville, which supposedly is somewhere in upstate New York, and the cast of characters that surrounded them were the most ridiculous stereotypes you could ever find. But the show was just absolutely hilarious because this guy, who was the most sensible person in the world, was surrounded by absolute chaos and all these bizarre characters. Mr. Haney was a classic TV character. Tony, remember, Eddie Albert would be talking to his wife, it was Zsa Zsa Gabor's sister, Ava, who played the role perfectly. She didn't want to be in the country. She tried to acclimate, but was failing miserably. And he would talk about, we need so-and-so. And all of a sudden you'd hear the horn honk in front of the house and he'd open the door and Mr. Haney would be there. And whatever Oliver was needing, Oliver Douglas was needing, was on the back of his truck. Uh-huh. So, Mr. Hank Kimball, who was the county agent, was a hilarious character. I mean, the whole show was just awesome. And, I loved Green Acres and I love the jingle. Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan. Just give me that countryside.
Oh, that's fantastic. That was great.
Oh boy.
There were so many great shows. You know, you're bringing up a lot of shows that kind of And I don't even want to say they're cookie cutter, because a lot of more Norman Lear type of I call them, it's like college football, misdirection shows, where you come in, you have a plot of one person in the show believing that this is going to happen, while someone on the other side of the room didn't hear the original story and they thought this was going to happen. And the entire time they're kidding each other and like, well, so someone thinks they're pregnant and the other person thinks they're getting divorced, and they never hook up until the end of the show. And that was called, it was called misdirection comical TV. And that's where Three's Company came in. That's where One Day at a Time, that's where Maude came in. That's where Alice came in. That's where, you know, All in the Family came in. But then when you talk about some of those earlier shows, like the Petticoat Junctions, which I just were fantastic shows. I saw something and I don't even know why I watched it. And I wanted to ask you before we let it fly today, was there one particular show that you really loved, you really remembered fondly, but then when you caught it again, you were just really busted? And I will tell you, mine was Flipper. I mean, we used to watch Flipper all the time.
Oh, for sure.
I used to love me some Flippin' Flipper, and I caught it the other night, and I sat there through three episodes of it, and I was trying so hard to find the correlation, the connection I had to my childhood, my youth, and what made that show so special, and it sucked. It was terrible. The editing was terrible. You could tell where they were replaying the same part over and over and over again. When Flipper would come up alongside the boat, I mean, it looked like something that they did in someone's back pool in the backyard in at a California lot. And I'm thinking to myself, I spent my entire life watching the show thinking it was the best TV show in the world. It was terrible. It was horrible. It ruined it for me. It was terrible.
That is so amazing, because I was a huge Flipper fan too. Oh. And I remember once my family was in, and we're forgetting what's the resort in Tennessee that's up in the mountains above Chattanooga.
Opryland?
Up in that area.
Dollywood?
Yes. Yeah, oh. Whatever was going on there at the time. But, I remember we went to, not knowing, but the kid who played Bud was actually there, and he wasn't much older than me, if at all. And he was signing autographed pictures that day. And it was like, Bud's here from Flipper. It was like such a big deal. And Bud was, I can remember, even kind of a letdown. He just was a kid who he didn't have much personality. He didn't really talk to you. You waited in line for an hour to get his sign a picture. And he just kind of go, okay, move on, kid. That I remember that being a letdown. So it's funny that you talk about Flipper, because now that you mentioned it, I can even think, I was thinking back to visions of that show, because I don't think I've caught an episode of that in 50 years.
Oh, man.
But I'm thinking back to Flipper, and I can kind of see in my head some of that just stock footage that they ran in there every week when whatever dramatic thing was going on, the footage of Flipper hustling to do whatever he's going to do to save the day. It was the same thing every time. And now that I think about it, I know exactly what you're saying.
It was the same exact shot every single time, time. It was like, and I was going to go see if I could find me some Lassie episodes, but I didn't want to stick the revolver all the way down my throat. I didn't want to ruin my entire thing with animals all in one day. But I was so disappointed that Flipper was bad television show. It was horrible. It was terrible. It was terrible.
What a bummer. That's a good one you mentioned, because I have seen some Lassie episodes, and a little underwhelming. The heroic acts and the amazing things the Lassie could do. I imagine if we really probe there, I bet a lot of that was common footage too.
Oh, no doubt.
Of getting some scenes of Lassie dashing across the field to go alert somebody to the danger, or somebody being trapped in a mine, or whatever she was doing that day to save the day. Lassie's a good example. I'm sure that show would be very underwhelming to watch today. And you know, how much different is our society, Tony, with these kids today that are so sophisticated? I've got a 3-year-old grandson now, and I have heard him be critical of something he's watching on TV, how that was dumb, or, things probably would never have entered our young minds. But these kids now, with all their access to whatever they want to watch, He's a 3-year-old. He's got a little tablet that he can set up at a restaurant. They stick headphones on him. He's just happy as a clam watching over and over these different things. The viewing for a modern day child, so much more sophisticated and advanced than what we had.
It really is. We were sitting out here with our next door neighbor. I had a little fire pit going. I think it was Saturday night. It was getting kind of cold. My next door neighbor has a 1 and a 3-year-old. They're both in their terrible twos. And I was like, you know what? I haven't done anything for my neighbors in a while. Why don't you come over here? I'll make with some s'mores. We'll do our kind of thing. We'll be good to go. And of course, so my next door neighbor, she had to bring over her dog. And so, you know, this. So now we got a fire pit that's 5,000 degrees. I have a 1 and a 3-year-old. I have a woman who's brought her dog. It's like 17 years old. God bless it. And it keeps getting itself wrapped around the pole. It doesn't, and it's dark and I'm sitting there and I'm trying to find enough sticks and I'm trying to make some more. And so the 1-year-old just absolutely loses. It just starts going chaotic, starts losing it. And my daughter, God love her, 11 years of age. I'm on peak's end. I'm almost at my flipper moment. And she's like, Dad, I got it. She pulls out her phone and she pulls up Bluey. She pulls up Bluey and she said, this gets him every time. And that kid didn't say a word for another 45 minutes. He sat there and looked at Bluey. He's like, could you imagine Kip Kiefer standing out in his driveway, his mom and dad's watching Bluey back in 1969, how many times it would have gotten us through our tough times. And aren't we better people for it? Because we had to figure the crap out.
That's for sure. I mean, it's a whole different world. I have met Tony's daughter, and she might be 11, but she's long beyond her years. She's an impressive young lady. I think she's going to do some great things. Well, and obviously already has the formula for unruly children. That's something I still haven't really figured out.
You got it going on. Hey, looking forward to a big show this weekend. Alabama's filling up its roster of assistant coaches based on the big hire. And of course, that was something that we actually broke on ABC 3340 last week. We actually knew about that news before it actually hit the airwaves. We had to be kind of careful on what we divulged based on our knowledge of the hire there for Alabama. But we're happy to let the floodgates down this weekend, talk about all the coaching changes going on, talk about college football. We got hoops going on. I know your son's going to be picking some ball games. He's got some basketball futures this weekend again.
I think so. Okay. He'll definitely have some input on that. He had a really good week on the NFL playoffs. If you recall, he called for taking the points with Green Bay and Dallas, the shocker of the weekend. Mm-hmm. And not only you took the points, you had a lot of points to spare because Bay boat raced the Cowboys, who had won 16 straight games at home. So Case has been very good and historically is very good, particularly on the NFL playoffs. So that's must see TV. Plus, we'll have a lot of great insights like we always do. And I don't know if I'm really ready to transition to basketball, but I guess I'll grudgingly tag along if it goes that direction.
We'll figure something out. Check us out, ABC 3340, every Saturday morning from 10:30, 11 o'clock. Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry on the starting lineup. Till next week, thanks for listening and thanks for watching here. Kiefer and Curry on TKR.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.